A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Sunday. Is it the 6th or 7th? 6th of September, 2020. Now exactly 3 p.m. So we will continue with the sharing on the path to truth for modern day bodhisattvas. We are at page 161. The title is The Difference Between Humanistic Culture and the Normal Usual Culture. So there are three phases of Dhamma, as explained by the Buddha. Phase one is the learning of the teaching. He called it Pariyatti, where you learn the teaching. Then after learning, you put it into practice. He called the second phase of Dhamma Patipatti, which is the cultivation of the Dhamma. Then after you have cultivated, if you have the condition to awaken, you can realize phase three. Phase three is Pativeda. Pativeda is the fruition of your hard work. After you have cultivated, developed the understanding and awakening, then you get to live the third phase of Dhamma, which is living the life of an enlightened being, so that you can have all the understanding with you and you don't have to suffer anymore, so that you can see your life transform. So Pativeda, the third phase of Dhamma, is the best and is the most beautiful part of our human life. The title is The Difference Between Humanistic Culture and Normal Culture. So this aspect is what Tzu-chi is trying to introduce. Earlier on, they developed some form of very useful missions to try to transform society, to transform the world. First, they bring forth generosity. After generosity, then they came to realize you need education. You need education. Education is essential. That's why they actually introduced the program to bring about education to those who don't have the opportunity or condition for education. They rebuilt a lot of schools. They funded a lot of projects involving education too. Then the other thing that they saw is medical needs. So their medical mission is also quite well established. Then after they have these three in place, they realize one more area which human beings are lacking. Humanistic culture means the moral aspect of our world's diverse culture, as opposed to normal culture. Normal culture evolved according to civilization, but it lacked the humanistic aspect, which is the moral aspect or the ethic aspect of human values. So this is the topic which could be interesting. So we will go through, then we will maybe discuss it. The difference between humanistic culture and culture. So I explain. Humanistic culture means the culture that takes into consideration of the human values, human code of ethics, where morality is a very important aspect of culture. If your culture is evolved just based on evolution of civilization, then without the moral value, the human value, it can actually be very destructive. It may not help the the human race, or it may not help our society. It can lead to degeneration of society. So we are going through this particular topic. In the early days of Cixi, most people in Taiwan were poor. That's how they started that mission. As poverty is closely tied to illness, so they saw this. So Cixi initiated the medical mission after establishing the charity mission. But they realized when they promote charity, it can pool the resources of those who can afford or have the means to help others to actually bring about that generosity economy to help people. People who are in need of help, in distress, in calamity and honesty. That's how the society come about. Cixi come from the two words. Cipei is compassion. And Jiuji is to rescue people from crisis. So compassion and in time of crisis is very important. So this establishment of the charity mission will go hand in hand with the medical mission. Then they continue. They realize in any society, education is essential. Only with education will people have a better future. Once our society is stable, educating and transforming minds with culture become all the more indispensable. That is why over the past 40 years, Cixi developed its four missions: charity, medicine, education, and humanistic culture. So that's how Cixi evolved over the years. So a lot of things that they did are based on this four mission. Then they carry it out with compassion, wisdom, and understanding. And through their various project, mission, and undertaking, they have actually bring for a lot of condition for many wholesome things to arise. It's not only help relieve suffering, it help the volunteer, the cultivators, the people who are responsible for the setting up of the whole organization to develop this compassion in action, to have the condition to train living bodhisattvas. That's why they talk about the bodhisattva way. This title of this book also very unique. The path to truth for modern day bodhisattva practitioner. So they always call them renjian pusa, means bodhisattva within society. So Cixi's four great mission, together with what they stand for and believe in, is a very fertile ground to train bodhisattvas to develop the understanding of the important mission that Cixi is undertaking. And this has helped a lot of people, help society, help the world, help the volunteers, the organizers, the members, and everybody that is involved. You not only develop the synergy to contribute, to relieve suffering, to bring about wholesome condition for cultivation and practice. So you develop a lot of virtue, like gratitude, compassion, love, understanding. So all these are very beautiful. So the four mission can transform society, transform our planet's consciousness, and also transform the way of life of the volunteers, members, and even the organizers and others who are involved. So simple things like charity project, medical mission. They have a lot of medical mission. They build many hospitals, dialysis center. Then they have a lot of medical assistance to people with suffering, calamity, and all those things. Then, of course, education is also very strong. Then now is humanistic culture. So with all this in mind, we should rejoice in what Suji has done. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So all this is part of the teaching. Because the teaching of the Buddha, you look at it, it's very simple actually. But to apply it, it's not easy. But if you understand, the scope is very wide. And it can apply to the whole spectrum of life and society, humanity, the environment, the entire universe. So all these are very beautiful. So when we talk about virtue, we talk about our values, our moral values, our kindness, our generosity, our respect, our contentment, gratitude, sincerity, honesty, kindness, gentleness, pleasantness. All these are great human values. Then when we have a good heart, a loving heart, we can open up to all levels of society. To all segments of society, we can transcend beyond nation borders, race division, belief system, etc. Because all those divisions are created by the thought. So Dhamma can have great application when we understand. To have Dhamma is to have wisdom. And without wisdom, there is no real virtue. So if you are a cultivator of the path, if you really go into the teaching, you will end up having virtue, true virtue. If your cultivation don't make you more virtuous, means your cultivation is not in accordance with the teaching of the Buddha, if you have gone astray. Because his teaching is very simple. He just summarizes his teaching into his advice, Dhammapada verse 183. Sabba papasa akaranam, the Buddha says. All evil is to be avoided. Sabbe is all. Papasa is evil. Akaranam, to be avoided. Then kusalesa upasampadan. Kusala means wholesomeness. Wherever there is condition for development of wholesomeness, we should do it. We should develop it. Then the final advice is Sacitta Pariyotapanam Etang Buddhana Sasana. Citta is mind. We have to purify our mind. So avoiding all evil, cultivate wholesomeness and purification of mind, leading towards the awakening or the wisdom, are the three pillars of the Buddha's advice. And these are the advice of all Sammasambuddha, not only Sakyamuni. So when we understand this, then we understand the whole teaching is to avoid all evil, cultivate virtue or wholesomeness, then develop wisdom to understand true virtue. So if you have the Dhamma, you would have become a better person. You will have virtue in you. And without wisdom, there is no true virtue. Only with wisdom can there be true virtue. So cultivation is to train our mind to develop heedfulness, leading to awakening. Then after that, virtue will come in. When you understand, you realize only virtue can help you to become a better human being, to transform your life. Without virtue, you will fall into the evil path of delusion, heedlessness. And that will bring about downfall. That's how living beings suffer, fall into coming affliction, coming negativity. So this is how we develop the understanding of the cultivation. Dhamma itself is very simple. Don't make it complicated. Yeah. And to avoid all evil, the Buddha teach very simple thing. He said we have to first recognize what constitutes evil. If we can understand what constitutes evil, then we can develop the ability to avoid evil. So what constitutes evil according to the Buddha is very simple. He said there are three major evil roots. They are the roots of all evil. You have them, you become evil. And what are they? They are the three major evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. In Pali, the Buddha called it Lobha. Lobha stands for greed. And that meaning is very deep, very wide. It's not only greediness. In fact, all of your selfishness, your craving, your positive craving, your desire, your grasping, your clinging, your attachment, they are part of greed. Even lust is part of greed. Then the other evil root is dosa. Dosa is negative craving, all of your hatred, envy, jealousy, unpleasant feeling, dislike, negative craving, they are all under this evil root of hatred or dosa. In Bahasa is your sin, dosa. Then the third evil root is sakkayadity or moha. Moha is delusion. So delusion is born of self-delusion. When you think you exist, the form and mind is real, you are what it is, then you get yourself entangled. Then you will grasp and cling to the five aggregate form and mind, thinking that it is real, it is you. Then it will create the personality, the egoic mind, the ego. And once that one arises, that entity will develop the first two evil roots of greed and hatred. Where you start to have this entity that wants to own things, possess things, and have things. Then when you don't like something and when things don't go your way, you become angry, emotional, violent. This is the negative craving. That's why greed and hatred, the evil root, they manifest. Then when you don't understand, you develop fear, anxiety, doubt. And this is the result of delusion, not understanding the truth. So these three are the evil roots, the Buddha said. When you understand that these are the evil roots, the next step is to develop mindfulness and awareness, to have the ability to be aware when they arise. When your feeling has become pleasant and unpleasant, is the evil roots of greed and hatred has arisen, or sensual desire and ill will has arisen. These are the first two evil roots of greed and hatred. And also the first two mental hindrances, sensual desire and ego. So mindfulness can allow you to be sensitive, to have the ability to be aware of them. So when you are aware that the evil roots are there, the mental hindrance are there, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. It will make you evil and cause you to have coming negativity leading to downfall, suffering and misery. So what must you do? You must determine to abandon them. That's how the four right effort come in. The first right effort is to abandon whatever evil that has arisen. So it can be an evil thought with the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. It can be a selfish thought. Then it can be one of the wrong speech with negative mental intention that has the evil roots. Or it can also be a wrong action with the evil roots. So when you live life, you have to arise this three way of communication through action, speech and thought process. So when you are mindful, aware, and you know what constitutes evil, you can see them. That's how you can cultivate the right effort to abandon them. And how to abandon them? There are five ways the Buddha taught. And we have gone through, it's all in the teaching, the Heart Sutta teaching. So go through it, cultivate it, then transform yourself. So avoiding all evil, cultivating goodness, wholesomeness, then meditating to develop wisdom is very useful. And basically the teaching is so simple. So when we understand that, then we know we need to train our mind to be heedful. And to be heedful, we need to train it to be aware, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, leading to heedfulness. Then we are home. So the whole teaching is very simple. So I repeat. First, you have to understand what constitutes evil. Then what constitutes wholesomeness. That's how you cultivate. Then train your mind to have mindfulness, stabilize it to be ever mindful, leading to heedfulness, so that you can be sensitive and not to detect them. Then the four right effort, then the meditation. So all this must set in. Then follow Avijja Sutta, step by step, go into it. And all this come from the first right view. Right view with regards to the law of karma. That's how the morality aspect comes in, sila. When you have sila, you are on the right path. When you are without sila, you have deviated. You are on the wrong path. So according to the Buddha, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. This is the fifth daily contemplation. And when you contemplate and reflect, then you realize karma plays such a great role in our life, each and every one of us. So what must we do? If we don't take care of karma, we will suffer. We will become miserable. We will become afflicted. So the first thing that brought to mind is to take care of karma. So that when we take care of karma, karma take care of life. Well, our entire life is dependent on karma. If we are born of it, we inherit everything that karma gives us. That's why we are heir to our karma. Then we are conditioned and supported by our karma, the karmic nature, every moment, every instant. Then we are what we are, every moment, every instant when we arise. So everything, almost 100%, is karmically driven. So if we don't take care of karma, we will suffer. We will become miserable. We will be afflicted. Our life will be affected. So we have to determine to take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? we have to follow the advice of the Buddha. That's how the advice come about. We have to avoid all evil, otherwise we cannot take care of karma. Then we have to cultivate wholesomeness, virtue, goodness. Then we have to develop the purification of mind to become wise, to become enlightened, to awaken. Then basically, his teaching become clear. Yeah, according to the Buddha, the law of karma is very simple. You reap what you sow. Do good, begets good. Do evil, begets evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you reap the fruit of wholesomeness. You plant the seed of evil, you reap the fruit of evil. That's how people get themselves entangled in life. That's how suffering comes to be. Whatever you do to people, the environment or society, karmically, it will reflect back. It's like science. To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So the moral causation is the same. You reap what you sow. Whatever you did to people, your affliction, the suffering, the misery, the fear, the anxiety, the panic attack, and all those things that you did to people, all this has karmic friction. When they come back, it will hit back, maybe not this life, future life, but they come back in the form of you becoming the victim. You change role. Last time you are in position of arrogant status, maybe authority. That's how you can do all those funny things. You can take advantage of people and become selfish, authoritative. You neglect your duty. You don't feel for others. You just do what you like. So your heedless, selfish, deluded way with all the emotion, anger, hatred, and sadistic character created karmic suffering and misery to others. Then when the time comes, you become the victim. People do back to you. Take for example the prison, the first prison. You kill and harm people. Karmically, when you take future birth, you tend to have a lot of condition to be killed and harmed by others. That's why you will have short life. You will have suffering and misery. Because this is what you inflict on others. Then you neglect your duty as a parent. In future, you have parents who will neglect you. Then as a children, if you do not do your duty or develop gratitude, full of piety and understanding, in future, you will end up having children that do back all these things to you. Well, this is how you did to your parents. So a lot of thing about karma is you reap what you sow. You can see all this. So if you don't want to have this type of karmic negativity coming back to you, then the Buddha's advice is you have to avoid all evil by keeping the minimum 5 precepts. Well, violating the 5 precepts constitute major evils. You can check for yourself. We have gone through all this. Then when you understand that, you will determine to hold that precept sincerely so that you will never, never allow it to fall. Because the advice of the Buddha is all evil is to be avoided. Not only avoid evil. All evil. So you have to be ever mindful to really avoid all evil. Then when you develop wholesomeness, goodness, kindness, gentleness, sincerity, honesty, contentment, gratitude, then you will reap what you sow. People will be kind to you, honest to you, sincere to you, loving, compassionate, helpful. Then you will reap all this. If you do your duty well as parents, as children, in future you will have great parents who will care for you, sacrifice for you, provide for you, and bring you up in a very special way. And even as children, because you do your duties very well. So in future, you will have children who will do duty towards you, who also care for you, love you, provide for you, and give you the joy in life, the happiness. Then you will bring honor back to your family. Your parents will have a lot of joy. But this is what you have done as a kid. So you reap what you sow. So if you are kind to people, friendly, nicer people, in future you meet with a lot of great people who will be friendly to you, kind to you. So this type of life is so much better than the other type of life, which is full of evil roots, negativity, heedlessness, and delusion. So you every time harm people, take advantage of people, cheat people, deceive people, kill people, and do a lot of funny things. Misappropriate thing, DC. So in future, when the karmic friction come, people will do back to you. If that is not what you want, please refrain from all this evil. Follow the advice of the Buddha, keep your precept, and always be mindful of this teaching. So this first aspect of right view, with regards to the law of karma, is very important, very powerful. That's why our today sharing this topic is about humanistic culture. You must have human value, moral value, the ethics to live the human life ethically, morally. Okay, we go back to the sharing, then we can understand. Although our mission will establish one after another, means the four mission, you could also say that they develop simultaneously. From the very beginning, we published the Ciji Monthly and the Ciji Readers Club. Then we expanded into other media such as radio and TV. Their TV is Tai Tai. In Ciji's fourth decade, our main focus was to develop the mission of humanistic culture. That is their last pillar. We used to call it the mission of culture. Then I said, let us not only use the term culture, but use humanistic culture instead. Humanistic culture is more appropriate than culture because it implies the passing on of a spirit or a belief. Here, what she means is the moral values, the ethic part. What is the difference between culture and humanistic culture? Nowadays, the diverse culture of modern society showcases all kinds of different norms. Some young people, for example, have tattoo. They like to wear nose ring, dye their hair, dress in ripped clothing, or aim to look intentionally disheveled. This style can also be referred to as culture because it is evolved from society's evolution. Culture is comprised of the trends that are formed according to the society's evolution or to the time, and it changes with time. When people blindly follow trends, they may be negatively influenced. So this is true. Like earlier on, they had the hippies and all those things, the drug addicts and all those things. But when it comes to just fashion alone, not so bad, like the way people dress. What we hope to have is the humanistic culture that encompasses the quality of truth, kindness, and beauty. You can add in love also, in compassion. Take one's appearance, for example. 30 staff members are required to follow our dress code and etiquette by upholding a clean image and a refined character. They are cultivating sincerity in both speech and action. This is the quality and spirit of the Buddhist practitioner, as well as the image of the Ciji Wanting. It is about giving off the fragrance of virtue. See, the main result of your cultivation is having virtue. Virtue is all your wholesomeness, your goodness, your kindness, your love, your sincerity, morality, etc., which can be sensed by others and earn their heartfelt respect. Human beings regard themselves as the most intelligent of all living beings. Etiquette set human apart from other animals. Abiding by the ethics or etiquette means behaving properly. Suchi's humanistic value is about abiding in proper etiquette and moral values, which will make life beautiful and meaningful. So this is how we can actually make a difference to society. Because a lot of younger generation people, they like the modernly evolved type of culture. So like nowadays people like to do tattoo, which is very true. So in the past, the way they make do with their clothing and their hair, they dress like hippies. Then they really get themselves involved in gangsterism, then drugs. Then sometimes certain type of cultures are very funny, very strange, because to us maybe we cannot understand them. But most of these come about because of society's evolution, the consciousness. Because society have bring forth such condition to make certain younger generation you go this way, because they are so frustrated with the way society is. They were so neglect. And sometimes society evolved until it becomes so bad, it conditioned all this type of behavior to manifest. So there is no point pointing fingers. That's the reason why Dhamma need to be understood and cultivated by the individual. Like Jay Krishnamurti say, the individual must change. If the individual does not change, the collective consciousness cannot change. If the collective consciousness cannot change, society cannot change. Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things we learn it. Like we went through early on, the pandemic, everything. It come about because society evolved in such a way until all this become possible. Then it happened. Then the way human being mitigate this or go about all the countries' mitigation measures or the action plan that they take, if you don't do it properly, it will end up worse. That's how we see a lot of things happening in this world of ours. But it is a way to let human beings learn, develop the understanding and evolve so that we can progress as a unique human race. Otherwise, we will continuously become complacent, then we will neglect our duty and create a lot of wrong happening in this universe. Then we introduce the wrong way of consciousness. That's how the repercussion, the side effect, it manifests and hit back. So looking at the way we experience society's evolution, we will come to understand how important Dhamma is. So without the Dhamma without the spiritual understanding is very difficult to transform society, to bring about a more meaningful and susceptible society. It will evolve according to how the human consciousness evolves. So we need more and more of this understanding, especially humanistic culture, Dhamma understanding, yeah, sincere people who have the virtue, the understanding to help transform the world. We need leaders who are honest, sincere, and virtuous. But nowadays, very difficult to find. They say this type of people like doesn't exist anymore. In Cantonese, they say like obsolete already, chichong already, means no more in existence. Or like the dinosaur, extinct already, they say. Okay, I will read on, then we can develop the discussion further. Media coverage play a crucial role in society. Oh, sorry. I think I go back to the paragraph in front. For all those involved in the mission of humanistic culture, we hope that they will bear witness to our time and document human history. We know that people must promote the way. It cannot promote itself. Media coverage play a crucial role in society. Therefore, media worker must set an example and shoulder the mission of documenting story or exemplary individuals into history. One often say that the true purpose of news reporting is to guide the public onto the right path. News reporting should not vilify people or sensationalize incident to create a chaotic culture. So what do you think? In our true society, normally the media are not so ethical. They have selfish intent. They take side. Then they actually distort the whole thing. So all the media, most of them, they are not honest, they are not sincere. So we can see that these things are happening. So most media are there to create sensation, isn't it? Because with sensation, their media have better sales value, sales revenue, become more popular. Then they can command higher advertising fee and all those things because of the popularity of that media. Then sometimes they are being like controlled by politicians and all those things. So all this, we need to have the understanding as an individual not to be influenced by them. Okay, I read on, maybe we will develop more understanding. We hope that the media can make known exemplary individual to pass on the ethics, morals, and ethics of humanity, while at the same time documenting inspiring story of virtue and goodness. This one seldom done. If all people can earnestly devote their life to spiritual cultivation by benefiting others and contributing love, and then truly, truthfully documenting and circulating what they have said and done, that is documenting story or exemplary individual into history. I sincerely hope that Ziji's mission of humanistic culture can become a pure stream of love, bearing witness to good people and good deeds of our time, documenting true life story of individual, and spreading goodness and beauty to the world by creating a cycle of kindness So this is I think the end of this chapter sharing, huh? So based on what has been written by the author, I think she is trying her best to actually bring forth this understanding of humanistic culture for the betterment of mankind and humanity. But based on what is happening in our modern world society, I don't think the media is playing its role. Most of the time, the media is more interested in sensational things and their political views. They do take side. And nowadays, to have good ethical journalists, very difficult to find. Very difficult to find. Because that selfish intent within each and every of these professionals, especially those who are involved in the media industry, including journalists, of course, they have their own bias. They have their own selfish intent. So seldom do we really see a very sincere journalist who really wants to do something for society, for the world, for all human society. So all this, we can actually reflect, contemplate, and find out for ourselves. But like I said, if more and more people develop the transformation of their own understanding, means the spiritual understanding, for Buddhists, of course, is the Dhamma understanding. But whatever religion you may be, as long as you are sincere, as long as you are honest, you have the faith, and you sincerely cultivate to develop wholesomeness, to avoid evil tendency, and to develop wisdom, wise understanding, then the world will be a better world. The individual must change for the totality of consciousness to change, to evolve. That is the only answer. Okay, now it's 3:53, we are still early. Maybe we can continue for another 10 or 15 minutes. Okay, next page. The core principles and the Bodhisattva practice of discipline. So this topic also quite interesting. Living Bodhisattvas are like farmers. This one is according to the author. When we vow to become living Bodhisattva, we must first cultivate the field of our own mind so that Bodhi seed can sprout, grow, and bear a lot of fruits. In that sense, then the analogy is correct. Living Bodhisattva are like a farmer, because they vow to become living Bodhisattvas. So to do that, they must first cultivate the field of their own mind so that Bodhi seed, Bodhi means enlightenment, the seed that can give rise to awakening, can sprout, grow, and bear a lot of fruits, means wisdom. We must further spread seeds of goodness to the whole world so that people can cultivate an immense field of merits and blessings together. So this part is very meaningful. However, in order for Bodhi seed to grow into great trees in the field of our mind, four conditions must be met. So these four conditions are your virtue. So according to the author, he said, let sincerity, integrity, faith, and steadfastness be the earth on which Iceland. So you look at all these four, do you realize it's the same as the three things that I told you? For you to be successful in this cultivation, to walk the path of Dhamma, what must you have? Sincerity, faith, and perseverance. So it's the same. Huh? Sincerity and integrity and honesty, they are the same. Faith is the same. Steadfastness is just like perseverance, when you persevere. So these three things, as long as you are sincere, you will not go wrong. Then from sincerity, the faith will develop. Then the only thing is left is to persevere, to endure, to go, to continue on. Do not fall back. As long as you are sincere, you have the faith, the path will be there. You only need to persevere. So all the cultivator, they know these are the foundation on which you cultivate, you stand on to develop the cultivation. We must cultivate the inner quality of trust, honesty, sincerity, and virtue, and without ignorant thoughts from our mind, so that the bodhisattva can take root. So this is a nice way of putting it. Let love, compassion, joy, and selfless giving be a gentle breeze of the heart. So you can do this, you will become beautiful. You will be a blessing to all. You must have love, you must have compassion, then you must have joy and the selfless giving. Then be a gentle breeze of your heart. So to have all this, you must have wisdom. Without wisdom, there is no real love, real compassion, real joy. And you cannot be selfless. And you cannot just give and give and give. And all the kindness, gentleness, you need virtue born of true understanding, which is wisdom. When we act with kindness, compassion, joy, and selfless giving, the ambience of this virtue feels as pleasant to others as a spring breeze, and will inspire them also to be kind, to be sincere, to be loving, to be honest. So all this, they can move on. Let the wondrous wisdom of Dhamma cleanse like water, which is very true. Only by cleansing and nurturing our mind with wisdom and the wondrous Dhamma can we return to our pure nature. And this is very true. Returning to your pure nature is very beautiful. This is your true mind, your true nature within. Because for this to unfold, you must have the wisdom to let the mind return to its pure nature. The mind, before it stirs, is this pure nature, very beautiful. But when it starts to deludedly stir and react to sense experience, it created negative tendency, the evil roots. So all this is the beginning of downfall. Then when due to self-delusion, ignorance, lack of understanding, the mundane mind starts to proliferate, become heedless, and creates the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And because it lacks spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance take over and make you heedless. So the mind that is heedless think a lot, have no moral value, no ethics, don't understand virtue, very egoic, And because of the ego, it is full of selfishness, full of emotion, anger, hatred. And when it don't have the understanding, it develops the negativity of mind states like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. So all this are the result of the heedless thinking, born of self-delusion, born of ignorance. So without Dhamma, humanity fall, living being fall. So what we need is really the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the only spiritual tool that you can develop to come out of all this delusion, so that you don't have to go through all this karmic negativity, yeah, and affliction within society and life itself. Okay, we go back to the okay. So just now we were at this, let the wondrous Dhamma, wisdom of Dhamma, cleanse like water. This is very true. Only by cleaning and nurturing our mind with wisdom and the wondrous Dhamma can we return to our pure nature. So this statement is very powerful, very deep in its meaning. So just now I explained to you, our pure nature is before the mundane mind come out, before the stirring, before the self-delusion, the ignorant and all those things, and the heedless thinking. So meditation is to silence our mind to return to this nature. That's why our teaching is very simple. Relax, maintain awareness, and allow it to slow down the mundane mind. Then let it return to its pure nature, the awareness nature. Then from there, you can understand many things. Then use that silent mind, that pure nature, awareness nature, to observe, to develop wisdom, awakening, and understanding, to insight into phenomena. This is how you meditate. If you don't do that, there is no way. So the wondrous wisdom of Dhamma can clean like pure water. Only by cleansing and nurturing our mind with wisdom and the wondrous Dhamma can we return to our pure nature. So without wisdom, your mind cannot slow down and cease. Without wisdom and the wondrous Dhamma, you cannot understand the true mind, your true nature, your pure nature. To understand that, you have to have the Dhamma, the wisdom. Then when you can witness or observe it, ceasing, and experience the silence within, when you are able to perceive the pure nature, that is the beginning of meditation. That is the beginning of understanding that you have two minds, the mundane mind and the true mind. Yeah. So you must make use of this understanding mind as a, what they call, basic understanding of mind. Without this basic understanding of mind, very difficult for you to penetrate the Dhamma, to realize the awakening and the understanding. That's why Mahayana used this word, Sing Wei Ken Ben. You must start off with mind. Mind as the basis of cultivation, the foundation for cultivation as a route to go by. Then I will read on. Let diligence, and this is very important, empower like the sun. We must open our heart and expose it to the warm sunlight so that the seed of goodness can sprout and grow. So this one is just an analogy. Don't go and take it literally. Then go into the warm sunlight and go and shine. Forget about it. This is literal meaning. So here, what the author is saying is, let diligence empower like the sun. Means when you have this virtue, virya, diligence, or perseverance, diligence, it's like the unlimited resources of the sun. You have to open your heart and expose it. Means have an open mind and expose it. Here he used the word warm sunlight as a literal meaning, figurative literal meaning, so that the seed of goodness can sprout and grow. Means that virtue in you can sprout and grow. It's just like whatever seed you plant, you need to have the nutrient, the water, the air, the oxygen, and the sunlight. And only it can grow, sprout and grow. So this is just a figurative analogy. Then sincerity, integrity, faith, and steadfastness are the fundamental principle of conduct. So this one we have gone through. We must learn to adjust our mind every day. If we always treat people and matter with sincerity, then we will not have any regret. If we uphold integrity in our mind and our action, everything we do will be just right. When we treat people with integrity, means honesty, then no one will hold grudges against us. Additionally, we must resolve to have faith, belief in the true Dhamma. Now, this is very important. Faith in the true Dhamma, and cultivate ourselves diligently. If we are firm with our vows, this is also very true, and honest in every step we take, we will not be tempted by any external condition. This is very true. When we are able to cultivate sincerely, honestly, with integrity, trustworthy, and again, honesty, come on, then we will trust one another. Furthermore, we can inspire more people and encourage them to combine their talent and ability for great love, to act with loving kindness, compassion, joy, and selfless giving. So these are the very important understanding. That's why the title is Core Principles and the Bodhisattva Practice of Discipline. So these are similar to the three very important basic virtue that you must have for you to walk the path of Dhamma successfully. Sincerity, faith, perseverance. Then we read on. Tzuchi started with charity work based on the spirit of universal loving kindness for all. We take care of all beings in the world with kindness, even if we do not know them. This is very true. We relieve their suffering and bring them joy, forming good affinity. This is also very true. This pure and untainted love is kindness, no matter what adversity we encounter. We will have no regrets. This is great loving kindness without regret. So the Tzuchi's way, or the the way they introduce all this is very beautiful. It also brings together the people who have the parami to develop generosity, kindness, to donate, and the volunteers, and all those people to carry out this mission of charity, yeah? And humanity relieve suffering. So that synergy actually trigger the Dhamma way to really at work through its own mechanism and movements. Yeah. So the way you come out with all this activity that can be beneficial to the human race, to the human society, to our planet, to the world, can bring forth the condition for Dhamma to actually manifest. Mm. So how we plan all this and how we develop all this, you can apply the Dhamma within. Yeah. And when the Dhamma is being applied, it's so beautiful. It has so much synergy, and it benefited so many. Mm. So this aspect is very useful. Right? So that part, this is great loving kindness without regret. Means they just do, even though they may not know any of those people who are involved in their relief or suffering project and activity. Sometimes it can be an alien country, entirely different culture, different race, with different religion. But they transcend beyond religion and race. They just do the humanistic work. Okay, we read on. Life is most precious. The greatest suffering in life is illness. This one everybody knows. In our mission of medicine, we act in a spirit of feeling others, suffering as our own. Strive to save life and relieve pain and suffering, especially since there are still many remote places in need of medical resources. These places not only need the hardware of medical facility, but also the software of the humanistic culture of medicine, which is love. Surgery volunteer treat patients as their own family member, even when sighted or exhausted. Oh, sorry, even when slighted and exhausted, they have no complaint. This is great patient endurance. This is great compassion without complaint. I call it patient endurance. Therefore, since we are firm in our faith, we must move joyfully forward, open our heart, use our wisdom, be accommodating and understanding towards all people and matters in the world, and learn how to give with great love. In doing so, we will attain great joy. With a broad mind, we will praise others' achievement joyfully. We call this rejoicing. When we are happy every day and can rise above our perception at all times, our life will be peaceful and at ease. When our hearts are filled with joy, we have no worries. This is great joy without worry. I call it satisfaction. When you have done something really, really wholesome, good, you feel a lot of joy. You are very satisfied with what you have done. And that joy, money cannot buy. Actually, it's very true. Many of these early on, Kayamita, who has depression and all those things, they become so miserable, they suffer so much. Then later on, when I share with them the Dhamma, when they start to understand, they came back with very good feedback. they told me, but dear, what you say is very true, is it? Because last time they are totally entangled in like the cocoon of thought, cocoon them into thinking all the wrong thought, the depressive thought, which are very compulsive, of what OCD, of obsessive, or what? Obsessive, compulsive, and intrusive. So all these thoughts actually cocoon them into misery. It's all wrong thought. Then when I try to explain to them your life, why do you want to allow yourself to be trapped in this way? This is not life. To me, this is suffering. This is misery. This is getting angry with everything. The evils are there creating all the wrong thoughts. Life is much more than that. There can be so much more in life, so much joy, so much happiness, so much beauty, kindness and wonders. Why can't you relook at the world? Go out into life, go out into society, help people, do something kind, do something sincere to benefit society, to benefit others, to benefit the world. Then they went and tried. They even tried out in the temple or within their home environment, their office. Then sometimes they also go to Tsuji and other things. Then they say when they open up their heart and share and be honest, be sincere, be kind, be virtuous. They see the smiling face. They see the joy that people reciprocate and respond to them. They felt so good. For the first time, they have joy. They have happiness. Then their heart open up. They become different. They no longer get themselves entangled with the wrong thought, that condition, that suffering and misery. And this is how the Dhamma, through understanding, actually reverse all this affliction. You like come out of the cocoon of wrong thought, the trap. That's how people come out of depression. Then they realize they no need to take medication. They no need to take all this psychiatric medication, like anti-depression pill. The various type of drug that help them in their chemical imbalance and all those things, like anxiety pill and all those things. These are all chemical imbalance drugs that can help them to stabilize their anxiety and all those things. But if you take them, you become dependent. Then you have problem. Then when they are in such state of depression, they cannot sleep, they have insomnia, and they have a lot of misery, suffering, suicidal thought, all these things. So all this can only be reversed through an understanding. Through understanding that you hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be unhappy is entirely your choice. Why not wake up, choose wisely, choose to be happy. Choose to have joy, to have good thought, right thought, virtuous thought, kind, sincere thought, thought of contentment, joy, happiness, understanding. Then you can do something for people. There's a lot of joy, there's a lot of happiness. Then you can help out in a situation. You can experience that too. Give it a try. Don't lock yourself up. Then if you need friend to bring you to these places where you can help out, initially maybe do recycling, do something for society and all those things. And sometimes they go and visit these people who have needs, suffering, misery. Then you help out in whatever way you can. You realize by doing this, you are cultivating virtue. You're planting the seed of virtue. You're opening up your heart to have goodness, to have kindness, to have love, to have compassion, to develop meritorious action. This is contributing to society, to humanity, to the Tzu-Chi cause and all this thing, or to any organization that actually wanted to promote all this. Sometimes you can help your own family members, your kayanamitas, or your neighbors, your colleague, your friend, whosoever who is in need of help or assistance. So many of these are the Dhamma way to actually benefit the world, society, and humanity as a whole. So all these are very good way of understanding. Okay, we go back. Oh, we have to stop now. Okay, we are at... okay, there is great joy without worry. That means satisfaction. When you do something wholesome, you have a lot of joy, a lot of satisfaction. Then your heart open up. Your virtue start to surface. Then you will have gratitude. Then you will have joy. Then you will have contentment. Then when you start to observe and see the suffering of all these people, then you realize your own problem is very small, nothing, compared to what you saw. They all, food and shelter also not there. And some are hit by calamity and all those things, everything destroyed, gone. Loved one also affected, gone. And so then you start to realize your own problem, personal problem is so small in relation to this. Then you have gratitude, you have contentment. You're no longer so sorrowful. Then you like thank yourself for your good karma. At least your situation is not so bad. There are others worse than you. Then later on, when you understand the Dhamma, when your life starts to change, then you have a different type of joy, different type of gratitude and contentment. But with the Dhamma, life can be so beautiful, so different. So wonderful. Then you have this joy, that you have the condition to come into contact with the true Dhamma, to understand all this. So it turned out to be a blessing to this in disguise, so that you can move this way. So these are very beautiful understanding. Yeah? Okay, I think we stop here. We are 4:23 already. Yeah? So as usual, yeah, we were off the light. Then you can actually develop the meditation on your own, based on your own understanding. You can just relax and maintain awareness and let the true mind return. Let the mundane mind slow down and let it become quiet and still. Then your mundane mind, when it is already not interfering, then it will return. You will realize your true mind. You will return to your pure awareness nature within. And then stay there, maintain awareness. Then initially, because the consciousness is trapped inside, you have the senses. Every time the sense data and the sense consciousness, the sense, what they call, the mind, the consciousness, and the sense data. Upon contact at the sense basis, it will trigger off the respective sense or consciousness. Just silence your mind and maintain awareness. Aware, finish. Could it be hearing, thinking, or tactile sensation? Or even your heartbeat, or your awareness of your breath, or whatever. You just let it be. Aware, finish. No need to think further. No need to know. Just let it be. Then let the nature stabilize. Let your true mind return. Then stay with the awareness until it's very stable, very clear. until you understand, then find out what that awareness is. Is there a being? Before the arising of thought, what is that? That pure nature before the knowing. Find out. That is meditation. And that one is very sensitive. That is the nature that can understand, can awaken, can insight into phenomena, can give you the wisdom. Then only you can have the true understanding of who you are, what you are. Apart from the mundane mind, you have another nature within. So find out what is that nature, the awareness nature. Why I say there is the unconditioned, there is the unborn. So meditation is to understand all this. Then find out who are you, what are you, how you function as a human being, all this. Develop it through the meditation. Okay, so now I will set the 45 minutes of silent awareness meditation. Then you all can start your official awareness-based meditation. I will ring the bell after the 45 minutes is up. The 45 minutes when it's up, my handphone will trigger off the alarm first. Then I will ring the bell. Upon hearing the bell, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then we can continue with our second session, which is meditation reporting or asking of Dhamma question and also sharing of you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you need to develop while going through life. And when you can maintain the inner peace, inner awareness and inner mindfulness for longer and longer period, then you integrate it into your daily mindfulness, your meditation will progress, you will take off. Ultimately, it's the daily mindfulness, the stability of it. The form of meditation, the training is initially to stabilize your sati. Then after that, your mind must enter sati. Then after that, you stay with the awareness within, the silent awareness nature, your pure mind, your true mind within the silent. That is the meditative mind that can understand many things, that can develop the meditation and the understanding. Then use that to develop understanding. Use that to cultivate, to awaken. Okay, so now we come back to our second part. Second part is meditation, reporting, come whatever question you may have regarding the Dhamma or meditation or how to apply this teaching in life. So Dhamma in daily life, you can share it or speak about it. It's up to the individual. If you have meditation reporting, you can report this. Then you can share your Dhamma in daily life, or you can just maybe ask a question, it's up to you. Okay, now we open it up. Hello?
Hello, yes.
Yes. Now you can share or share your Dhamma in daily life or ask question or report your meditation. Up to you, yes.
Good afternoon, Bhagavad and Okay, let me ask.
Yes.
See, for me, recently I realized the most important thing to cultivate the Buddha is the silent mind.
Yeah. That one.
We don't have silent mind. We can't move at all.
Yeah. You need the awareness.
We need the awareness and the silent mind.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is most of the time when my mind go out, I aware all the time, and when it go out, the moment I realize it go out, I bring it back at the present moment.
Yeah, then also you can go to your heart area, anchor it at the heartbeat there.
Yes.
You can be aware from there, means you're already aware. So every time you are not there, means you are in the thought. So the inner awareness is very important. So every time stay there, the inner awareness, away.
Recently I find I have less thought.
That is good. Yeah.
Less thought, and I found that when the moment my thought come, it doesn't proliferate for so long. And I can what I call as they call tekan break. When I realize the negative thought or the happy jet tendency arise.
Yeah.
I can realize and I can I can be with it, and then the thing I don't get pulled into that pool of muddy.
Yeah, correct. Not like previously, huh?
Yes, not.
You
not
will not be like drawn into it, continue with the thought proliferation or the train of thought creation. Normal people will have a lot of that. They think a lot. The heedless thinking like cannot stop. But when you are more and more aware, when you have the initial wisdom developed, and you see the understanding part behind, there is no meaning to arise all those heedless thinking thoughts. Means all those that is non-beneficial, like frivolous thinking, the habitual tendency. So all this you will start to understand. Then when you understand, you can just let it be. Then after that, you realize it no longer has the thought energy to sustain itself or continue that way of heedless living or thinking. So heedfulness starts with understanding, stability of mindfulness, awareness. When you're aware, you understand the unisop manasikara that is aware will prompt you. Sankara anichang, sankara dukkang, no meaning. Think also like that, don't think also like that. Then what do you want to mean? If it's non-beneficial, better let it be. No need to continue. Then the awareness itself can make you calm, peaceful. And when you are most of the time aware, peaceful, your mind becomes different. Means you are not heedless anymore. You are not lost in thought anymore. But the mind that is not trained has the tendency to think. Because that one is a habitual tendency. It has been conditioned into that state for so long. But when you understand, you can just develop more and more specific phenomenal awareness. When you are with a specific phenomenal awareness, you cannot think. You just aware. Or you perceive, aware, finish. Then you move on. But sometimes, if you are living life, then you have to arise a thought, no problem. And think with awareness. Then when you go about doing your thing, like poaching, come to know, buy fruits or what, develop the mindfulness. You pick the fruit with awareness. Do everything with awareness. Your hand movement, your activity of your physical body, whatever you see, the phenomena you follow. Then with the inner awareness, the mindfulness become different. Become more and more stable. This is how you start to develop it. Then when you start, you will start to know many things. You will start to see your own thought movement more and more, more and more. And how fast it moves and get itself entangled with other issues, you start to understand. Initially, when you saw those movements, don't panic. No need to worry. Because you only have to understand the untrained mind thinks a lot. Jesus, I need to train. The moment I aware, I break that sequence. I break that habit. Then I continue to be aware, aware. Then later on, when you are very stable, when you want to think, only think. Means the mind is trained. When you don't want to think, it's just aware, silent. Then it can be with the moment. Then you can experience everything the way it is. Everything is so beautiful, so pristine. When you're silent, your senses are active. You are fully with your senses. Yeah. So when you are with your senses aware, you cannot think. That's why you just silent. The silent mind aware. That's why you cannot think. And whatever it picks up is aware. That means you are in the state of awareness to understand what is going on. You are not just lost in thought. Heedlessly thinking, 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 no more. So this is a very good start for you. So you can go through that and stabilize that mindfulness. Do the bowing more, the daily mindfulness more, the daily religious routine more. The daily religious routine is very important. When you do one, do the mindfulness become very stable. Then all this like become automatic. So then when your mind enters sleep, you will understand. You can see everything you do is already in sleep. Every action, every movement, every hearing, smell, taste, tactile. You realize your form and mind is different now. The awareness is so clear, so stable. It like doesn't run anymore. Then you are like within, always aware. It's like a trained mind. It listens to you. It follows your instruction. Whatever you want to do, it just do. Otherwise, it just maintain awareness. And awareness can be in specific phenomenal awareness. Or spacious awareness without a center, it's just aware. Then when you anchor it at the heart, you will stay there, away from there. From there, you're aware outside, aware of what you hear, aware of what you perceive, aware of what you smell, you can tell you do anything. Then that movement becomes different. You start to understand what mindfulness is, what awareness is. What is heedful doing? It's so different. Okay. Yeah. Professor. Sadhu Deva. Continue to develop it until it's very stable. From your description, it's still not stable yet. Yes?
And I realized that there are more joy when we are aware, we don't, we are more contented, there are more joy in our heart. Even like
definitely, yes.
In the evening at the park, you can feel the joy just arise.
Because when you understand life, there is joy, there is contentment, there is gratitude. All this gives rise to joy. That is part of the progress, the training. But your mindfulness, later on when it stabilized, it becomes different again. You penetrate again, you become different again. And that type of understanding and joy become different again. That's why the daily mindfulness must reach a stage of stability that is very stable. Then everything you do, you become very different. Anything else that you want to share with us? Or ask any questions?
No, just wait to for some time that if we have time, we have to invite Bratio out. And have some birthday celebration.
Yeah. We can go somewhere. Yeah, quite near already. September
month
already. So maybe we see how.
Yeah.
Now they can have gathering, but not too big. I think not too big. Then per table they may have limit. We need to maybe size it down a bit. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now you have the privilege to nominate somebody.
Can we hear from one of our new members? I think it's new members because
okay.
Who is it? These are David.
Oh yeah, he used to log in very early on. Yeah,
yes, we haven't heard from him at all.
I heard him talk to me before the class start in the early session. Yeah, David is very, very punctual and very early. Yeah, David, are you there? David, we unmute you, then you try to come in. Unmuted already. David, are you there?
Good afternoon, Brother
Teo. Introduce yourself. Kayana Mita may want to get to know you, David.
Actually, I can only generally say because I think the teaching is very good because the I since MCO, I have been
You join us very often. I saw you always the early one. Yeah. Then we spoke once or twice, I remember.
Yes.
Before the class start, yeah.
Yeah, but I...
Subang?
Yes, I stay in Subang, Taipan.
Oh, Taipan. So most of the Kayamita Thursday class are Subang people.
Yeah. I used to go to... Actually, I go to SJBA for my meditation Monday, Thursday, yes.
Yeah, Suyan Nifong.
But the MCO actually gave me a very good opportunity for me to improve further in my practice. The main thing actually, I can say that, you know, I follow your this every day or every morning. I do my meditation for 1 hour. Then before I start, I do the take the three refuges. And ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, that one will help you.
Yeah, daily contemplation.
Ah, sadhu.
Yeah, then I think I can sit only. I can sit better because
sit better and you will have more understanding. Then you will see for yourself that you have become different. You have
Also, the last one actually is you follow your two support.
Yeah,
relax and aware. Yeah. Last time I cannot sit for half an hour. Now at least I can sit for 1 hour.
Ah, very good. Wow, Sadhu. Yeah. Wow, let us rejoice. Very good. Yeah, and when you just relax, aware, you can sit longer.
Yeah.
And your mind very calm, very peaceful because you don't resist it. You don't try to stop the thinking. You don't try to note this, note that, and do all those funny things without understanding. Because by doing all those things, you create more thinking without realizing. That's the reason why a lot of people cannot meditate. So for you, if you really follow the instruction and try it out, you will understand. You can see it better. And all those heedless thinking or whatever habitual tendency that you have last night, they will start to slowly subside. And it doesn't affect you anymore. Where you can just accept them. When they arise, let them arise. Then you patiently relax into all mind state, then maintain awareness. And then slowly the mind quiet down. Then you can sit longer. As it quiet down, you become very peaceful, very calm, very relaxed. Then for the first time like in your life, your mind become more peaceful, more quiet, more tranquil, and more aware. It doesn't think like before. Good. Sadhu.
Only one question I ask for the deal is, during the sitting, I can see the arising of the thought. But ending of the thought, I can see.
Yes, because when you are calm, aware, with the silent mind, you can see. That's why I can say, earlier on, you remember in the sharing, I told you, you can see the birth of the thought.
Yeah.
The formation and birth of the thought. Then how that thought ceased, you can see.
Yeah.
Then how thought arise, how thought sees, then what is thought is always respond to something, memory. After you perceive, you create that thought, the content come up, the mental intention behind that content, then your views, opinion, and conditioning, how you introduce all those things in. And that thought is conditioned into moral and immoral based on your views and your opinion and your conditioning. So all this you start to see. And when you start to see, there is meditation. Then you tell yourself, why am I this way? How it conditioned my emotion, my like and dislike, my pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, my continuous arising of thought and thinking when I don't understand. Then when I start to see all this and understand all this, then I ask myself the question, why am I this way? Why am I not peaceful, not aware? Why am I not heedful? It's because your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, your memory, all this create thought. So when I understand all this, I straighten my view. Thought arise because I lack the spiritual faculty. Thought arise because I don't have right view. So when I have right view, when I understand thought, the limitation of thought, then I know thought is sankhara. The Buddha says sankhara anicca, it come and it go, it arise and it disappear. Then if I give it meaning, it conditions suffering. That's like sankhara dukkham. Then I start to understand, when I want things my way, when I give meaning, I attach, I cling to self-delusion, my mind state become affected. Then I realize, if I can accept things as they are, like the Buddha said, and let things be, then I realize I don't react anymore. I don't stir my mind anymore. Then I can be at peace. Then I start to understand. If I straighten my view and accept them for what they are, people are just the way they are. The world is the world, like the Buddha said. Condition like that, things will be like that. Then I realize I can be at peace. I no longer hate that person. I no longer project my thought to have fear, worry, anxiety. All those things cease. So these are negative mind states. When they don't arise, I realize I am peaceful. I am mindful. I am aware. I am heedful. And I can have joy. And I can live life. And that's how you transform. Then through that observation, that's why you need the silent mind. You start to develop more and more understanding, more and more joy. Then you straighten your view. And that straightening of the view is initial wisdom. That one will come and prompt you. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkang, dhamma anatta. The world is the world. Learn to see things as they are. Silence your mind. Do not give meaning to things. The aggregates of mind, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, and vijnana, they have the universal characteristics of impermanent because it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. So if all these aggregates are that, then how can it be me? If it's not me, then who am I? What am I? How come they arise in me? All this understanding will unfold. That is what meditation is all about. Then only the silent mind can understand. The silent mind is without the ego, the atta. There is no egoic mind inside there that say, I see, I hear. It knows, that is the awareness. Before the mundane mind come in, the egoic mind come in, there was no such thing. But when the sakkayadhiti self-delusion come in and input the content of consciousness and pop created that thought, then you start to understand how it become egoic. Then that one can have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, selfishness, emotion. Then you realize this movement is the mundane mind. Nothing to do with my nature. My nature don't have all these things. When I have wrong view, only this thing arise. Then I realize this nature is so beautiful. Without the views, opinion, and the conditioning, it has the energy to witness and see things as they are, and awaken and understand. Then no more deluded, no more the old way. Everything become different already. Ah, there is meditation. So it's very good that you can start to see the formation of thought, the birth and thought, and the ending of thought. That is the beginning. Initially you see, but later on you can see how you input the content of consciousness. And why this content of consciousness is like that? It comes from your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, your whatever training that you go through in life. So all this, you start to see these are accumulated memories. Sometimes even your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your deep resentment and unhappiness. So all this mold you, condition you. That's how you function as a human being. As I thought, it's respond to all these accumulated memories. And the most of the psychological memory, like your phobia, your fear, your insecurity, your unhappiness, your resentment, your envy, your jealousy, or the way you perceive things, your like and dislike, they all come from your conditioning. And it has become a habit. That's why you react very fast. So the content of consciousness go in very fast. Without the mindfulness and the awareness, you cannot see. Then you start to understand why human beings think in that direction, how their egoic mind arise, how their delusion condition them into such heedless thinking and arising of thought. So this is real meditation. But to see all this, you need to have very stable daily mindfulness. So hopefully with today's sharing, you can maybe develop deeper understanding, David. So
yeah, thank you very much.
All the best.
Thank you.
So, you got anything else to share or?
Only one question. Sometimes during the sitting, you are aware. Then halfway, you can see something like drop from the mind. It dropped down. I don't know what is it dropping down. After that, you feel very calm and relaxed.
Yeah, it's a shift of consciousness. The consciousness shift because your thinking like suddenly stops. Then that shift bring you to your awareness nature. That's why you become very calm, very quiet. It's like middle of the night. Suddenly, the car all no more. Or the sound, like from the rain on the awning, suddenly stop. Then you become quiet. Or when you start your computer, then when you end your computer that time, if your computer is an old type, where a lot of sound, the moment the computer stop, the vibration or stop, you can sense that silence. That is the shift of consciousness. Your consciousness become shifted to another quiet consciousness. So the awareness that is able to be aware can perceive that. So that is a good sign. You use your own word and call it drop. No problem. Very good. It's the correct word is the shift of consciousness. Your consciousness actually shift because you patient enough to maintain the awareness. That's why I say relax and just maintain awareness. Whatever thing let it arise. Then you patient enough, like what Po Cheng went through, after half an hour, the shift of consciousness happened. Yours could be 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or 20 minutes. I don't know. It depends. Then when you become quiet, what do you do?
So I just aware.
But
it doesn't happen every time.
Yes, because that is a good sign. Means you are able to develop that state, which is a shift of awareness, very much faster. Means the duration becomes shorter and shorter. So you continue with that training, then later on, you will come to that ability where immediately you go into the meditation, means the formal meditation, you are in that state already, awareness. you already aware. You don't have to wait for a while for that shift to happen. Yeah, that will happen. Means when you do your daily contemplation, religious routine, daily mindfulness, you do. You do until the mindfulness come, until the mindfulness become a part of you. Your mind enters sati. Then your spiritual faculty very stable. Then you are in a meditative state throughout the day. Then that time when you meditate, you don't need to wait for it to shift. It will immediately be in that state. Sadhu to you. Very good.
To sum up, I actually want to say thank you, Brother Teo. I think that I think that your Dharma talks are very good, especially Paticca Samuppada. I think it's very, very good.
Very deep, huh?
Very deep, yes. But so I am trying to actually link up between the Paticca Samuppada and our meditation, but I still feel I still cannot.
Don't worry. When your mindfulness become very stable, all this understanding will happen. You can see it on your own ability. When you are stable in your mindfulness, everything that I share and describe become like clear to you, very easy to understand. Sadhu to you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Your teaching is good. At least I can see the progress, and feel that, you know, I'm going into the right direction.
The right direction. And you will become different. You will become more peaceful, more calm, more aware, and you develop more understanding. Even the right view to live life, the law of karma, everything will transform you. You will keep.
I think the five daily contemplation is very, very,
very useful.
It's very good because somehow I can. Last time I know karma, but now you really reflect on karma, karma, higher karma, yes.
Karma differently,
The
scope is so wide,
Not
what people say.
Very deep. Only thing I need time to keep going.
Definitely, because you consider very fast. You are so new, only a few months into the MCO. One thing good about you, you have faith and you're very consistent. I always see you very early.
I go in early. Actually, it's the honesty is a respect to Brother Teo. I have attended so many Dharma talks. I always see the teacher come in last one. Brother Teo is the one who is waiting for this. I think there's something different. So as a respect to you, I try to just click in, just to make sure that I'm ahead of you. This is respect.
10 or 15 minutes before that class time.
Yeah, because that
I usually come in early because initially I may need to be here to let people ask questions. Last time, there is a first 15 minute of what we call preparation because we are new in this Zoom meeting. And sharing, we need feedback and all those things. Then later on, I realized after we overcome all this, we don't really need the full 15 minutes. But sometimes some Kayamita may come in early and chat with me or ask some questions. So nowadays, maybe no such need, less. That's why less people come in that early. But I still saw many. After you, normally I saw Alicia, I saw Padmasuri, I saw Adeline, Manyuan Leo. All these people were coming quite early. Sadhu, very good. David, my nature region.
Yeah. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you. Yeah, Sadhu. Keep it up.
Sadhu.
Okay, you had the privilege to nominate someone.
Oh, there is one.
Name you see, you just nominate.
His name is what? Jayanta.
Jayanta, Dr. Jayanta.
Jayanta, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Jayanta. Yes, Dr. Jayanta. Amanda, he's not in, he's not in. Yeah.
He's
not in, yeah.
I see. Maybe next time, maybe I should, in this case, get Brother Ananda.
Ananda, yeah. Ananda. You have been nominated. Ananda, come in. Yeah, we were asked. Yeah. Yes. You have been nominated. Yeah. To share Dhamma.
Can you hear me? Is it clear?
Can? Okay. We can hear you. Yes.
Good evening and good evening everyone. Yes.
Yes.
So for me, I am not good in reporting actually. So I have no idea what to report.
Yeah, don't report. Just share what you have done, Dhamma in daily life, or you ask some question that can make you maybe learn and understand. Have you put into practice or try out whatever?
Okay. Yep. I do always make an aspiration where after the meditation sitting, hopefully can get more understanding the proper meditations that I don't know what exactly meditations is. So, but but I don't know. I don't really know how to frame it, but I might be. I'm able to feel like peacefulness sometimes, but sometimes no, depending. But also maybe my sadha is not so strong as all the spiritual faculty as Abhati says. I'm not so strong still.
Okay.
And at time I think I'm also very tired. You know sit for meditation.
When you are very tired.
Yeah, even like just now, I think I think I fall asleep.
Oh, good. Yeah, I That's think how I you look fresh too. Now. You look more fresh
yeah,
now.
I think before the
you were very tired. You were very tired.
Yeah, yes,
because I heard from my daughter Sui that weekend retreat, you and Jayanta were running many errands. I think you all not enough rest. You all were very tired.
Yeah.
And you all rested a lot. So it's okay when you know your body is tired. You rest. When you rest with awareness, it is meditation. So initially when you rest, maybe you go to sleep. It's okay. But try to maintain awareness. When you can maintain awareness while you rest, you realize you are meditating and resting and recuperating. You do all this together. And later on, you can have good rest, deep rest. Even when your body is so tired, while you rest, you maintain awareness, you can hear your own snoring. Then later on, when your awareness becomes very stable, you can go in and see your dreams, your subconscious release and unconscious release. You can see them. And you will start to know what dream is and what that dream state is. All these are possible. You must have faith, then maintain awareness. So tired is okay, rest. The only difference between meditation and sleeping is meditation, you must have awareness within. That is the only difference. So when you are tired, you want to rest your body. Your body is tired, rest. Then the tendency for most people who don't know how to maintain awareness is they go into the unconscious, they sleep. And normally when you're very tired, you sleep deep. But because of your heedless thinking and all those things, after a while, that deep sleep no more, then that dream state, the subconscious release starts. Then you realize you don't have that deep sleep anymore. So without awareness, you cannot see all these things. With awareness, you can see all this. Then you must remember, relax, maintain awareness. Initially, you can't, it's okay. You want to maintain awareness, you go into the unconscious, never mind. But after a while, after you rest, you become aware again. That is the beginning. Then you try again. Then later on, you will realize suddenly the snoring will come. Then one sound, upon hearing that sound, sometime before the full snore, before the full snore, you already aware inside that, that is meditation. there is awareness. Then maintain that one again. Then if you go to sleep again, you have the tendency to snore, that snore will come again, you aware again. Initially it's like that. One sound, then aware. That means that person is not sleeping. That person is resting, developing awareness of meditation. But the moment the snoring starts, that cultivator or the former mind is aware. And that is good. That is the beginning of real rest. You rest with the ability to be aware to meditate. So when you are tired, you can do that. You actually incorporate meditation into your resting. So later on when you are good, you can actually meditate while you are about to sleep, to rest. Then later on you can decide if you want to have a good sleep. You don't need to maintain awareness, just let the whole nature go and sleep. It's up to you. Then later on when you have developed stability, you can be aware throughout the day while you sleep until you wake up, like you never sleep. Now, all these are possible. I described them before. I went through all this. So for your case, you try to maintain awareness. No problem. Okay. Anything else?
Okay. Well, it's just my experience where I realized by doing the meditation and I rested very quickly.
You will recuperate and become very fresh, very quickly.
Very fast. It's very, very
without
fast.
Without the meditation training and understanding, you cannot. Your sleeping is like very inefficient time of sleeping.
Yes.
You are not really resting. We have a lot of dreams,
even a few hours, those doesn't help out.
Then you find it very inefficient type of sleep.
Yes.
You are not really right. This type, very efficient, very fast you recuperate. Sometimes when I remember during the early day when I started understand all these meditative things, I relax, silent, aware. Within 10 minutes, I recuperate. Even how tired I am, I recuperate. Then later on, I realize I need 15, 20, half an hour longer period. Because as you age, as you go through all this, your body needs more. Very good. Sadhu.
Okay, thank you.
Sadhu.
So,
okay.
Thank you.
That's all, thank you. About 6 o'clock, we can just stop. Very nice. So next time, you can nominate somebody. Ananda. So you have that privilege to nominate.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Later on.
Apologize to Brother Teo that I've previous few class I never managed to make it. Sorry.
Never mind, don't worry. I believe you and Jayanta have a lot of things to do. So now it's like back to normal routine.
Kind of. Yeah, sorry.
You're also doing your part, helping people and all those things.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Teo. Thank you.
Very good.
The Metta book that last time I promised you all. It has taken me actually a while, but good news, finally we managed to finish the Metta book. Because earlier on, I think about 2 weeks ago, one of the Kaimita who heard the earlier talk asked my daughter. Then my daughter texted me. Then only I recall, there are these two Metta books that I promised people. Then I managed to get two sisters, I think, one Lei Hong, to type out the old script. Then Eng Bi was more smart. She went to the internet, I think. He managed to get the latest version. But she did a lot of work also, actually. She actually modified that script to take care of the Pali words and all those things. Then I think that thing become much better. But the old format, I think the printing and all those things, the word file, they are not so nicely arranged. But I edited the first book that Lei Hong did one a lot, so that one will be very useful. But these are the two books that helped me a lot in my early years of cultivation. I remember 19, 87 when I started. So these two books were free booklet given at Brickfield. I received a very old book, very thin book. Then I found it so useful. Then I follow the description there. Then my metta become very strong, very powerful. Then I realized I benefited a lot. Then later on, I decided to reprint these two books. So that time I went through Wave. Wave managed to get the publisher to actually help me to print. So I printed 2,000 copies at that time, I remember. Then I sent it to Brickfield and all the Buddhist temple for free distribution. Then over the years, after I came out to share, then I recall these two books. Then whenever people have problem, first number two problem, and their mind state not good, I will advise them to listen to metta tape and develop this metta meditation, where is the easiest and the fastest way to develop the wholesome mind, to understand love, compassion, virtue, good mind state, to cut away enmity, hatred, anger, the various evil roots of selfishness and all those things, to develop benevolent empathy and all those things. All these are very good mind states. Then this metta teaching is actually from the scripture, from the Buddha, and they are very useful. They are taught to the monks as the first cultivation before you go into meditation. But when you have metta, your mind state are very stable and you have a lot of joy. This metta teaching, if you cultivate, it can help people who have depression to develop recovery, good mind state and all those things. Like just now I share, you can do something for people, you feel good, that joy and all those things. Otherwise, you cocoon yourself with all the depressive thought, the wrong thought, that thought that make you miserable, unhappy, sorrowful, with the evil root, all your fear, phobia, insecurity, all this, I realize they consume the living beings and make them miserable in the state of deep suffering and misery. They develop a lot of sorrow and lamentation. Then I realized this metta training open up the heart. So I have sent the thing for final, I think, generation of the content by Brother Teo and Sister Padmasuri. Once they finish, we will put it on website for sharing, but I will also attach them in the My Kayanamita website so that you all can download it. And whoever who likes it, if you need a hard copy, you try to print out your own. Otherwise, you wait. I will use the master to go and make photostat copy. Then with the photostat copy, maybe I will not photostat too many, about 100 copy-ish should be enough. So only those who need the hard copy, they can collect from me. Then we can use this book as a sharing in our next class or what. It will benefit you all. It's very good. So one of them is titled Metta Bhavana. The other one is Metta. I think a philosophy and don't know what of universal love. So these are the two very good metta book. One of them is written by Venerable Bhavana. His name happened to be Bhavana also in the early 80s, I think. He compiled them also, but at that time the technology was not good. The formatting, the word found on was not there. I think that one, the old way of typing and all those things. then the typing font all not so nice, and very small words. But this time I have edited it and improved on a lot of the English rendering, and also some what they call Dhamma understanding in between, that make it more complete. Then they quoted from the Buddhist scripture, the Metta Sutta, will say. So some of the English translation were also not so accurate, and the word they use also very difficult to understand. So Ng Bi and my daughter has helped to improve some. I also did some improvement. So it has turned out to be a much better book for study. And you can make use of that book to help you develop the understanding and cultivation. So this metta, there are many methods and techniques that is been taught. But the one that I find very useful was both the book are very useful. But the one that I redated was the first two or three. I remember it was starting with yourself, then to your teacher, your loved ones, then to somebody who is a neutral character, then to somebody you don't like, hostility, enemy, and all those things, then to all beings and all things, so that you can break through from your hatred, dislike, and all those things. Because most people cannot generate metta or love or compassion towards neutral people whom they don't know. Like no relationship, nothing to do with them. Then some, they cannot relate love and metta to enemy, to people whom they don't like and all those things. So all this cultivation is to help you break all this barrier. Because these are the conditioning of your mind state. The egoic mind thinks that you exist, that it divides you into friends and enemy, that it divides you into loved one and not your loved one, or neutral people and other things. Then you also have your parents, your teacher, your close friend, your colleague and other things, your brothers, your sister. So these are the relationship that you need to understand, so that the form and mind that cling onto this relationship exists within the conditioned world. Law of karma recognizes relationship, but when it comes to ultimate truth, the Buddha says anicchang dukkhang anatta. Anatta means non-self, empty nature, not a permanent unchanging entity. Therefore, he know you, he know me. So there is no such thing as you exist, you have your parents, your brothers, your sister, you know. In the ultimate truth, in the ultimate sense, when you understand, there is no such thing. He know you, he know me. So this understanding is the unconditioned. Whereas the law of karma is within the conditioned world, and both exist. So the difficulty about Dhamma is you don't know how to apply when to recognize relationship and when not to recognize relationship. That's the reason why the Buddha, under the teaching, the four great conduct of an enlightened disciple of the Buddha, there is one, the last one, Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho, of right duty, is the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So that form and mind, even though it's anatta, non-self, empty, not you, not a permanent and changing entity, but it is subject to karma. That's why that one, you cannot simply do things. Your thought process, your mental intention, you must have right thought, born of right view, wholesomeness. And that one recognizes relationship. That's why the heavy karma is matricide and patricide, killing your parents, your papa, your mama, then hurting a Buddha, killing of an arahant and all those things, then causing Sikhism. So this one recognizes relationship. This is the nature's law, law of karma within the conditioned world. So duality exists within the conditioned world. So all this understanding you must have. That's why metta is to help you to break all this while in the conditioned world, so that you do not like through wrong view, through your habitual tendency, conditioning, belief system, create negativity of perception of people and label them as your enemy, your neutral people, and various other type of division and category through religion, through belief system and all those things. So all this, the metta meditation can help. Then the other one is the directional one, I remember, all the 10 directions. And also the other one, extending from you to your neighbor until it extends to the whole universe. These are all very beautiful metta cultivation. I remember I cultivated until my metta was so strong. Initially, it's like you try to visualize, then you try to like recite. So I call that parroting when you don't have the understanding and the faith. You just like a parrot, recite. But if you start to develop some form of understanding, then you have the understanding, then that faith inside there will allow you to develop that metta state. Then your mind state will be filled with that metta. Then later on, when you recite with that feeling, from the feeling it come out. Then it become more effective. That is the first stage of metta. Then after that, the second stage is you can will it out. You can will it out. That metta become very strong. That metta become a force that you have developed. Then when you ready it with that understanding, your understanding will create that metta. Then when you develop it until it like overflow, a vessel overflow, you are overflowing metta. Then from your heart, this metta can be willed out to whoever you visualize. Very powerful that time. But the third phase is the most powerful. The third phase, very few people can do. But I managed to develop it. Because from that nature, no more will. No more from your mundane mind that will it out. That will out one also very powerful. Because it really go ready. Thought. Still thought based, but very powerful. The third one is from your nature. Your nature that has metta. There is a very soothing metta energy that come out from your heart. By itself, it come out very soothing. And with that one, the animals, the non-human, they can feel you. And I went through all those phases. That's why metta was very powerful. And I was in very deep meditative state when I was doing the metta. My mind was very calm. I went into absorption and all those things. There was a lot of joy. It's like, the mind is enlightened at that time. Nothing can actually make it unhappy at all. No. Everybody I see, people whom last night I don't like and cannot mix with, got no more barrier. No. It's just that metta just went through. And it's so powerful, so beautiful. So hopefully when this book come out, you all can read through it and we can have that sharing. And I hope it can benefit many people. So whatever we do for the photostat, I will use the Kayanamita fund. So hopefully it will be ready before my birthday. My birthday is still another 1.5 months plus to go. So before the end of October. So that we can have it shared with all Kayanamita. I hope Pamasuri and can help us finalize it. The generation of the content, I think, is quite straightforward. I think the only thing is Brother Teo has to do the Pali, we need to, he has a program where he key in that word, then all the words with that format will change. So that one I don't know how to do. I need his assistant, and maybe Pama Sri's assistant. Then once that one generated, the final copy, you can forward back to me. Then I will check through one more time. Then I will get Ingbi, my daughter, they all to help me to also proofread and do the spelling check for a final check before we put it officially on the website, share it. Then I will send for Photostat. Photostat, I think I can get it out within 2 days or maximum 3 days.
Thank you.
Yes.
I can ask if we need 100 copy, I can ask the price. If it is more or less the Photostat price,
no need the thick cover, you tell him. Just the normal color A5 size on. You ask and see. Then if like that, we can print 200-300 copy, no problem.
It was a better quality.
Okay. You check and see. If can, then maybe... So if you combine, you put the second book as appendix, the philosophy or something as appendix.
But only the second book need appendix, the first the second book as an appendix.
Yeah, okay. That's all.
And the index I will do for all.
You do for both. The second book you add as appendix. You add as appendix. Then it become very beautiful. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else want to share anything? That is the only part I want to share. Then we should thank all those who help out. Lei Hong, Amy, my daughter, and also Chin Hao, they all, Brother Teo, Pama Sri, and all those who have helped out. Let us rejoice. Sadhu. And Ingbi has given a lot of good suggestions too. So Ingbi is there. Sadhu to you, Ingbi. Ingbi, you can come in. You can say a few words. Ingbi.
Sadhu.
Yeah, Sadhu.
Yeah. Reasonable.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the printing itself.
Correct. That one we will do. You have gone through the book, right? How you find the book, Amy?
In fact, this was what we were taught in SJBA. Meta session. We were doing that.
Sadhu. Sadhu.
And then the Meta Bhavana also.
That one I think the Burmese tradition very nice. Chanting is very soothing. I like that one also. Then they have it in the CD, I remember. CD. Amy V one, Amy V one. Meta Chan. Meta Chan. The hymn. Meta Chan. That one also very good. Avira Hontu. Then all those things.
So all these 10 directions are inclusive inside the hymns.
And very powerful, the 10 directions. Before I even reached the 5th direction, my metta was so strong. Very powerful at that time, I remember. Wow, that metta was very strong for my nature. Then that compassion, that love, that metta, that energy, very strong. From that nature inside come out, I remember. It was so beautiful. And that was the first time I radiated it out. Then after that, I realized when the metta become a part of my nature, whenever I speak, that metta energy from the heart, the nature, the very soothing one, it just come out. Then that time I tested it. I try, I told you all before, I read it to somebody I don't know. That lady in front of me was actually lost in thought, thinking about something. The moment I read it, he suddenly, like something caught her, then she started to look up at me, then she started to smile. Oh, she also doesn't know why she smiled and why she do that. Then later on, I thought maybe the one in front one easier. Then I did one that walked in front of me one. Surprisingly again, this one turned around and looked at me and just smiled. I don't know why she do that. That time the metta was very powerful. Then later on, the Melbourne incident where the dog, that big dog, and all that. Wow, that metta was so powerful. I was meditating early morning, I think 6 something, I woke up early. Then in Melbourne, the suburb, I radiated to the surrounding, the tree, the nature, and all those things, and all the beings. Then this dog from far, he detected that soothing metta energy from my nature. Straight away he ran to me. The owner also panicked. So that was the amazing nature of metta done properly. It's very powerful. The metta energy is fantastic. That's why I remember the 2 books. Very useful. Helped me a lot. And I know what metta is because I did it. I really did it. Very good. Sadhu. So anything else on that, Ingvi? That's all, right? Yeah,
no
thank
more.
You.
Thank you very thank much, you. Sadhu.
Yeah, Sadhu. Yeah. So we should all rejoice one more time when we end, eh? Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu,
Sadhu.
Yeah, thank you so much, eh?